Good morning. It's 18 minutes after 8 a.m. You're tuned to your community radio station, Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Joining me in the studio is Phil Mooney with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Welcome to Morning Edition, Phil.
Good morning.
Well, we're here to talk about a couple of things, but we're going to start with deer, the deer habitat study that you're doing in conjunction with another number of other agencies and organizations. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. This summer, we started in on a deer collaring project in conjunction with the Forest Service, the Sitka Ranger District, and also the Sitka Conservation Society. And the object is to collar a small number of deer, primarily in the Stargavin Valley, and take a look at what those radio collars will tell us as they move around through the habitat. The Forest Service has done some second growth work up there, and the Stargavin Valley was impacted in the late 50s, early 60s by industrial clear cutting, and so the habitats changed quite a bit, and now with the time after that, we've got second growth in there. We want to know how the deer do in there when they go in and do types of treatment projects to open up the stand or thin it. So that's what the collars will tell us. They'll show us how they move through that, how much time they spend in certain areas at different times of the year. And some of the collars that are being used are very new tech where they actually dial a person's cell phone and download the data for 2 to 3 weeks of time so they have a chance to look at it. The other part of that that dovetails into that is Kent Bovee's science class is able to take students out there and track the deer and get approximate locations, work on the idea of triangulation to find a deer. They're going to use some of their video skills to try to film those deer out there, and also they'll work with the data after the fact. So it's got a multi-pronged piece of that, plus in conjunction with that, we've got a small number of, quote, urban deer that hang around Sitka in general, and we'll look at their behavior patterns versus the deer out of Stargavin. So most of the collars we have out there right now are bright orange, and we're asking hunters to avoid shooting those. We've got a lot of time and effort in there, and we'll have probably less than a dozen deer collared in total.
You're looking at mostly does, too, right?
Yes, we have been targeting does. Mm-hmm. There is one small buck that was, when he was captured this summer, that he was small enough that he looked like a doe, and he was hanging with does. And so he is wearing a standard collar right now, but he is around.
That sounds like one of the benefits of this particular study and how it's being organized and the technology you're using is that you're getting information a lot more quickly than you would have in the past.
Right. Most of the collars, what we call store on board, you put the collar on, it's on the deer for a year or a year and a half. It falls off with a timer that's based on the collar. Then you go in and find it and download the data. So you're looking at the data, but it's a year and a half old. So the idea of having some data coming out on a regular basis without really having to go too far to get it, like say put an airplane in the air and fly around and download the data. There are some collars made that can do that. Still, you have this is a situation where you can drive out to the end of the road. It sends a message to your cell phone, downloads the data, you take it home and take a look at it.
Wow. Well, and so you're looking to fill in gaps of knowledge in how the deer are moving through habitat and using habitat. How might that affect management decisions?
Well, you know, some of the second growth thinning work that's going on, it's based on a lot of other work that's out there, but you're still getting the finesse of it. It's how big should the patches be? How should be their spacing throughout? Do you leave corridors intact that are already established for the deer, or do you try to force the deer into something else? And that's kind of been what the situation is that in order to be efficient for some of the thinning contracts, you have a, quote, standard language for how the spacing is in that. If you go in and try to modify that, it's a change order. It gets expensive. So we're trying to look at the deer in the 20 years or 30 years that some of the intervals of the work, the deer have reestablished travel corridors. So if you incorporate that in there, you can achieve two things. You can do the thinning, but you can also accommodate the deer moving through there without changing their patterns again. And it appears from some of the work we've been doing over in Northeast Chichagof in the last 5 years and just what we've kind of spent time looking at how the deer move in some of these other areas, that their home ranges are fairly small. So that'll, the comparison of what's going on in Stargavin is one piece of it. The comparison to the urban deer that are free to move through the areas is another. And so you take that, you take a piece of this information, and you can apply it to other pieces across there. And by having smaller projects distributed, you get an idea of what, there may be some temporal differences between the deer just because of the way they've adapted to the changes over time.
What are some things you've learned about the Stargavin deer already?
Well, so far it was kind of a surprise at how difficult it was to find them in there in the summer. We had a number of trail cameras up. But after the does dropped their fawns, and it, within about a two-week period where the fawns could move pretty well, the deer pulled up out of the valley. They stayed in the valley, as far as we can tell. They just went up.
They moved further away from the water. More inland? Is that what you mean?
They went up the hill.
Okay, so they moved up.
Yeah, they went vertically up the hill, and they were on the mid-slope to upper ranges, and kind of told us one thing, that food isn't an issue in the summer, which is, I mean, that makes sense, that there's just a lot more food out there in the summer. And two, the trail cameras picked up a lot of bears. Five in particular, that sows with cubs, they came in there for the salmon berries and were in there pretty consistently from mid part of July to the second week in September. The other surprise was that none of those bears showed up in the lower Stargavin Valley. And that was kind of surprising. We were up there a lot, and of course with a campground host, we pretty well know if a bear shows up there. And a lot of people are used to going out to the estuary area and seeing bears. We did have a bear in there earlier, but it was the one that got himself in trouble by trying to pop a pizza out of a trailer, and he ended up being destroyed. So there was a void there, but for some reason, that probably only the sows with cubs could tell us, is that they weren't interested in going down there right now.
So you've got the bears moving down into the salmon berries. You have the deer moving up. Are you hypothesizing that the deer are moving away from the bear? What were you thinking?
It could be. It could be that, you know, if you have a fawn, there are some liabilities to that. And it's not like deer defend their fawns per se. They hide them, and they use the lack of scent to protect the fawn. But once the fawn is mobile, then it would make sense to get up and get out of the area. They just don't have to deal with the bears. Now, it was funny, too, because the trail cameras show that as soon as the bears started moving back out of there, the fish run had pretty much started to taper off, and they were usually younger bears. We had one show up that was fairly good size, but I wouldn't call him one of the big dominant males. But the sows picked up and moved. They were done at the end of the pink run, pretty much. They started moving out of the area, and the deer started coming back down.
Uh-huh. So a relationship there, perhaps.
But the other interesting thing is the time we spent in there this summer is that the ridges do get hit hard a good portion of the winter. The deer probably move up out of that cold valley a little bit, and they use that middle ridge quite a bit, and the browse in there is hit really hard. So it's historically taken a lot of use.
Well, you know, Phil, I could talk to you about deer and bear forever, but unfortunately we are out of time.
Okay.
But are there any parting thoughts that you'd like to share with the public?
Keep an eye out on for those collar deer and give us a holler if you see one. And please
don't shoot them.
Yeah, please don't shoot them.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us
this
morning. We've been speaking with Phil Mooney with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.